Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Big Joe Dubin with you. Every Thursday at 9:30, we say hello to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, talking NHL with him. Greg, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Can't complain. Because I'm not a Canadian fan, so I can't complain. It seems like every time I turn around, there's another fan base up there losing their minds. I was thinking about this the other night, like, every single team in that country right now has some level of drama or panic, except for Montreal. Like, Montreal is just, like, chilling. They're like, we stink. Like, we'll be good eventually. But everybody else has just got, like, owners spouting off and defenses failing and putting goalies on waivers and all kinds of stuff.
It's a mess, but it's also entertaining at the same time. Before we get into all that, congratulations to you, as you've re-upped with ESPN, going to be there for a while. I assume this is a one-way deal to keep you there at ESPN, but congratulations. That's awesome.
I appreciate it, and it's funny. The folks at one of the salary cap sites reached out to me to congratulate me, and they asked me for details of my new contract, and I said, you don't have to worry. Disney is still very much cap compliant based on how much they're paying me for the next few years. They are not over the cap. I can promise you that.
That's good. Well, look, that was the second biggest piece of news that came out of the NHL. The first was the San Jose Sharks finally won a game. It was quite the moment. I was working the Predators game, and I was keeping up with it, and I was like, this is actually going to happen. And now they find themselves 1-10-1 on the season. When is the parade?
It might be tonight if they can beat the Oilers, because then they'd be tied in points with Edmonton, that in the basement of the league. I affectionately referred to it in my column today as the rumble of the bungled tonight between the Oilers and the Predators, the Oilers and the Sharks, rather. So, you know, the thing about San Jose that's interesting is that, like, we all knew that they'd be terrible, like, and by design. Like, it's clear that they're tanking. You know, they have to re-energize that fan base. They have to kind of refocus the franchise. There are some players at the top of next year's draft that are going to be real good, and I think, you know, fit that purpose. But the problem is that their GM, Mike Greer, I think went a little like mad scientist in a sci-fi movie where he's looking out the window at the creature he created marauding the countryside and being like, my God, what have I done? Because this is a special kind of bad. Like, there are going to be nights when they get good goaltending and a little itch of pride infects the veterans on the team, and they win games like they did the other night against the Flyers. But for the most part, this is a really bad hockey team. Just inept, can't do anything right, and is going to be definitely counted amongst one of the worst teams ever assembled in the modern NHL era, I think, by the end of the season.
Greg Wyshynski is with us from ESPN. Now, you bring up the Edmonton Oilers and the fact that they're sitting there with 5 points at 2-8-1, 11 games into the season. They have the best player in the NHL, or really two of the best players in the NHL, and for whatever reason, they can't seem to get it going. The Predators beat them the other day 5-2. It feels like panic is setting in, and yet I continue to find myself going, they're going to figure this out. If they can just get some good goaltending play, they're going to figure this out, and then they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. But do you feel like that's actually the case?
Of course I do. I picked them to win the cup, so it can't be this embarrassing to have them finish like behind the Sharks. No, so the reason why you feel that way is the reason why a lot of people feel that way. I was talking to an NHL insider at Red Wings practice the other day, and he said, look, you know, out of all the teams that are outside the playoffs right now, they're the only one that you look at and be like, oh, they won 10 games in a row. They're right back in it. Like, you could see that happening. And the reason is because we've seen it happen. They won like 16 of 19 games to end the season last year. Like, this is a team that can get on that kind of roll, that can have Connor and Leon carry them. And then if they get, like you said, any semblance of competent goaltending, they could put together and stack wins and get back into this thing. The problem with them, as McDavid pointed out the other day, it truly is a death by a thousand cuts team. Like, every time they lose, it seems to be a different thing malfunctioning. They get good goaltending, they don't score. They score, they get terrible defense. We've had five ways to fix the Oilers on our podcast that dropped this week. And one of them is simply to try to get McDavid going. And, you know, he's got 10 points in 9 games, which is great for a lot of players, but not for Connor McDavid. And if you look inside the numbers, he's still creating. He's the number one player in the league in assists that lead to shots, but he's like 182nd in primary assists, which tells you this guy is creating things for his line mates. They're just not doing anything with that creation. And so, you know, the shooting percentages increase. Connor starts piling on the points. Like, there is a path for this team to get back into contention. But this start, you know, if they lose to San Jose tonight, the conversation probably starts to come to, do we make a big trade? Do we fire the coach? I mean, that's kind of how dire it is right now.
Greg, you're talking about your podcast, and this question always gets – I love to ask this. You talk about, you know, fixing a certain team and doing this and doing that. Do you ever do that and hear from somebody within the organization who remains anonymous and says, hey, you know what, you're right about that, or I'm going to, you know, run by the assistant GM and tell them that? Do you ever hear that?
I hear it occasionally more in my writing, I think, than on the podcast. Like, you know, the writing is usually in these columns. It's covering the entire league. It's kind of theorizing things. It's putting stuff out into the world and seeing if it comes to fruition. And occasionally I'll hear from people on teams to be like, that's funny. You know, we had that exact same conversation behind closed doors recently. Or you know what, if that happened, that'd be really great. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition. So first of all, it makes you feel good because the right people are reading your stuff.
Sure.
But second of all, you know, it's fun to think about, you know, people, you know, hitting on something that's already being discussed somewhere in these organizations. And yeah, the other part of it, too, obviously, is that, like, a lot of the things that I say and do is informed speculation. You know, you talk to a lot of people that don't necessarily want to go on the record about some of this stuff. And then you get a chance to kind of, like, share those ideas and contribute a couple things of your own. So you're, in some cases, you kind of maybe know what's going on, but then you're like, interpreting it and trying to figure out what it really means.
You know, it's funny, they'll never admit that they read your column or anything, right? They'll never admit that you've got any kind of inside information that they'll know, ever.
Well, they do when they want to butter you up. then it's like they're trying to make sure that you're writing something positive, and they're like, big fan of your work, read it every week, you know, and you're like, okay, that's great. But no, I know for a fact every year that somebody does read my, or is aware of my stuff, because when I make my preseason pick on who's going to win the cup, I text the GM to let him know, to give him the heads up that I'm selecting his team and pretty much cursing them. So when I picked the Oilers at the beginning of the season, I texted Ken Holland and I'm like, hey, I'm going to pick your team again to win the cup. And his response was, oh boy.
Jeez, thanks. Well done. I know, Greg, that you picked the Predators to make the playoffs this year. I mean, they're sitting right there with 10 points. Are they where you expect them to be right now, or a little bit behind where you thought they might be?
They're a little bit behind. Honestly, like, I really thought that their offense would be a little bit kicked into more of a higher gear at this point than it is right now. Last check, I think they're in sort of the bottom third in the league in goals per game, in a league where, you know, you have teams just piling on the goals every night in this league right now. And obviously, you know, the modus operandi for hiring Andrew Brunette was to try to make this team play fast and get results. And, you know, in the times I've seen them, I've been really impressed with the speed with which they play. Like, I think that they certainly are kind of adopting that mindset that Brunette preached in Florida and preached in New Jersey in his previous stops. The problem might be that they simply don't have the finishers quite yet to kind of actualize that type of offense. And, you know, that was actually a problem with the Devils before Brunette got there, which is that they played with speed, they played with pace, they like to get up and down the ice. But it wasn't until, you know, Jack Hughes matured and they added a few other guys, Timo Meier and players like that, where they could really start to finish off those chances they create. So that might be the issue for the Predators right now, because in the times I've seen them, I have liked the way they played. It's just they're not getting the results offensively.
We had Ryan O'Reilly on the show yesterday, Greg, and just, you know, talk about his leadership and his career in the league. How valuable is he to a team like this where there's so many young guys?
Oh, he's huge. And I mean, that was, I think, the intangible reason why they made that signing, was to have somebody who could, you know, not only fill the void at center that was created by some of the offseason moves, but somebody who was going to be able to be the right kind of leader in the locker room for a team that was going to go a little bit younger. And, and obviously also a guy who still has a ton left in the tank offensively and defensively, where he's been one of the better players in the league for like the last decade. So, I thought a lot of us were surprised, only because I think that the common wisdom was that O'Reilly would have been a perfect second line center on a cup contending team. But you know, to get the ice time that he's getting and to get the compensation that he got and to live in the area that he was going to live in, I think a lot of things really made sense when you take a step back and look at that deal. And I think he fits well into what they're building there insofar as being a mentor and a leader to these young players.
Yeah, for sure. And they're back in action tonight. Hard to believe it's their first division game as they'll take on Winnipeg tonight. But we're looking forward to that. Greg, appreciate it as always. Congrats again, my friend, and we'll do it again next week.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, joins us every Thursday at 9:30.
Chase.
Here on the program. Yo.
I had some really informative questions this time.
You did. That was good.
I'm getting better at this, and I'm so proud. Even Dr. Crane gave me the thumbs up behind the glass. All right, so I know we got to take a break, but for those that don't know, today in history was a critical, crucial, wonderful day for Tennessee Volunteers football. If you don't remember what I'm talking about, I'm going to bring it up when we come back, Chase.
Okay, we call that a tease. We'll do that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, presented by Regal Realty Group here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.